Roadman, today I'm gonna speak with Claire Walsh. Let's cue that intro.
The big question is this: how do we use cycling as a tool to improve our health, our happiness, and our longevity? That is the question, and this podcast will give you the answers. My name is Anthony Walsh, and welcome to the Roadman Podcast.
Roadman, it's Wednesday. Welcome back to another Roadman Cycling Podcast. I'm bringing this one to you from beautiful tropical Colombia, where I'm exploring around on my bicycle, seeing the good spots for you guys to check out, and generally just getting through a little bit of rest and relaxation, but also equal parts work. Today, I've got a super interview with you from Claire Walsh on the art of breathing. Breathing is so integral, and James Nestor has really popularized this in the last sort of 7 or 8 months with his brilliant book, Breathe. But it's just so integral to everything we do as an endurance athlete, mastering the breath, the transfer of oxygen into the blood. And it's been the core of sort of that EPO crisis was around transport of oxygen in the blood. But if we can naturally increase those markers, we're in a win-win. And today, Claire Walsh speaks to us about some of the ways we can do that. Before I dive into it, I want to give you a reminder heading into 2021 that the podcast needs your support now more than ever. It's over on patreon.com/Anthony_Walsh. And I've elected so far not to bring on a podcast sponsor. And I have this brilliant, maybe slightly optimistic utopian view that we can self-fund this podcast at least to a point, and we don't have to give away creative control. So many times I'm getting DMs over on Instagram from guys saying, oh, can you reach out to so-and-so? It'd be great to have them on the podcast. And I'm able to do that. I'm able to ask them the questions I want, and I'm able to dive into it and not put a filter on course, and I'm just able to be myself. Some of that does change depending on the sponsor you get in. So I've been super, super cautious about what sponsors we get in. I'm shutting down negotiations on that super early if I feel like it's not going to be able to maintain the integrity of the podcast. But with that being the positive side of it, the negative side of it is it's still entirely funded from user contributions and out of my pocket. And I'd obviously prefer to not lose cash every single week. So if you can dig into your pocket and buy me the price of a beer just once a month, if you're getting some value from the podcast, you can do that over on Patreon, and it really helps the podcast move forward. So let's get in chatting with Claire. Before I introduce her, just a little bit of background about her. Claire has dedicated her life to the study of breathing. She had a background in theatre, and she was always curious about movement. But it's her mission to better understand breath work and how it influences the mind, the voice, the body, and the spirit. She's even uncovered specialist ways to not only enhance her own performance, but to improve the way others live, how she lives, and her methods have informed teachers in the art of free diving around the world. She has some crazy long breath holds. She's an international competitor. She's a record holder, and she's just a really nice girl to chat with. Welcome to the Roadman Podcast, Claire Walsh.
Thank you so much for having me on. Greetings from Egypt.
Yes, you're out in Egypt at the moment. Suppose that's the best place for us to start. What's going on out in Egypt, or what's bringing you there?
Well, apparently there's no COVID in Egypt, which is terrific. It's quite literally head in the sand. So I headed out at the start of October, and just obviously numbers were going up, and there was talk of heavier restrictions, so I legged it. I had lots of training and obviously competitions and everything cancelled for this throughout the year. So this seemed like a bit of an opportunity to get some depth training done. So it's been incredible. I was supposed to come out for 5 weeks, but my flights have been cancelled all the way along. So I've ended up being here for 9.
Is Egypt kind of a, you know, our spot is we head off to Girona in Spain or Mallorca for cyclists. Is Egypt that spot for diving?
Absolutely. So the Blue Hole in Dahab, which is in Sinai, is, well, obviously locals laugh when we use this phrase, but it's the Mecca for free divers. So just off the shore, it's maybe a 5-10 meter swim offshore, and you get 93 meters depth, and
crazy.
It's sheltered. It's incredible. So yeah, It's the mecca of free diving.
So I went out on a bike ride last year. I was actually abroad, I think, and we used this Strava. It's this tracking, GPS tracking software, and sort of a social element to it. And I went out on a ride, and I rode for 197 kilometers. And I titled the ride, "Because when you're done, you're done." And it freaked so many people out that I didn't bother going to the round 200 kilometer mark. So when I was looking at your Bretthold record of 5 minutes and 59 seconds, how OCD are you about making that 6 minutes, or do you care?
It kills me. Yeah. And it's funny because my depth personal best is 59 meters.
I've seen that. I actually have that on my notes as well. I was like, I wonder, is this, do you know, you can, in a bike race, and we're going to get into the mental component because there's a huge mental component to what you do. But in a bike race, you can race for, you know, 6 hours and you can lose by a centimeter. And that's not physical. That's mental. How much of the 5:59 do you think is mental versus physical?
So in static breath hold, which is what you're referring to in 5:59, no, it's not mental, because so you get these things called contractions. They're really uncomfortable. And I get mine quite early. I get mine in around the 2 minute mark, which means I have almost 4 minutes of contractions, guys. Like, I can put up with stuff. So that 1 second is more about hypoxic threshold.
So what's a contraction?
So basically your body goes to do the movement of breathing. So your rib cage expands, lungs try to expand, but no air comes in. So it kind of looks like an internal hiccup, to be dead honest with you. It's like your intercostals are contracting, your diaphragm moves up underneath your rib cage. So if you hold, so if you don't have flexibility in your chest, it can be really uncomfortable. And also if you tense yourself and try to resist it, it just gets incredibly comfortable. If you soften as much as you can and just kind of ride the wave a little bit more, they're absolutely bearable. I never noticed them during depth at all.
So to rewind for someone that's not listening to this, because obviously I'm not hugely into diving, but I'm really into breath work, but I've researched you obviously for the podcast, so I know the difference between static is... Okay. I suppose David Blaine's record for someone mainstream, is that a static example? He's just sitting basically submerged?
Yes. So static is what it says in the tin. It's lying still in the water, airways, so mouth and nose, submerged. So it's a pool discipline. So there are three pool disciplines and static is one of them.
So that's mainly in contrast to deep dive.
Yeah, so that there's 4 depth disciplines, and they're measured obviously in meters below the surface of the water.
And is David Blaine a naughty bad word in breath hold circles, or is it a?
I don't think he would be particularly associated with freediving. I'm not 100% sure. Did he take pure oxygen before the dive, before his breath hold?
You know what? I listened to his podcast with Joe Rogan. It's really fascinating. I don't think he took oxygen before it, but I don't think he was bound by probably some of the same. I could be open to correction, or maybe I'm, you know, completely lambasting him with abuse here, but I don't think he was probably open to the same rigorous standards that you should hold yourselves to. I think maybe he was taking EPO and things like that pre-dive.
Yeah. Like obviously there will be quite strict standards simply because we do it in, you know, in water. His was underwater, wasn't it?
It was, yeah, underwater. Yeah, I can't remember what he held it for. It was a crazy dive.
Yeah, like the male world record is 13 minutes 6 or something, and the female world record is 9:02. So anything beyond that, then the biggest world record is 22 minutes. And that's a Danish guy called Stig. And he took, so the 22 minutes was on pure oxygen before the dive.
Okay, so David Blaine has the Guinness World Record for breath holding in 17 minutes, 4 seconds, setting a world record for oxygen-assisted static apnea.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, so taking pure oxygen beforehand.
Okay, and does that make a difference?
Yeah, absolutely. You're just oxygenating the crap out of your blood.
So to to rewind, because I got lost in my own indulging my David Blaine.
To be fair, I've done quite a few interviews and podcasts. That's the first David Blaine rabbit hole I've gone down, so I actually really enjoyed that.
Really, and you know what? It's totally because I was watching his crazy stunt where he was holding on to these air balloons recently, and I was just like, this lad is just tapped. And then I went down that David Blaine rabbit hole and seen he had that crazy breath hold, and it was long before we'd agreed to talk.
Yeah, I think there's a 22-minute or somewhere. Maybe you didn't get... whatever ratified or whatever the word is, but I think there's a 22-minute breath hold out there.
That's insane.
That's oxygen assisted.
So talk me through how you're 559 and how do you go about from being a normal person to someone who can hold their breath for 5 minutes and 59? Because often in any sport, we see the tip of the iceberg. We see these amazing events. And I like to differentiate events from process, because any event is normally preceded by a crazy process that nobody sees. What is that process of getting ready for that sort of event?
You see, the thing is, and particularly when I talk to people at home, a lot of people focus on the 5:59, so the time element of free diving, whereas that's a discipline I seldom train for. That's not where my passion is. All my time and kind of any time I'm yearning to get in the water, it's always about depth. So when I've done a 5:59, it's usually I've spent a lot of time doing depth. I'll have been doing my breathing techniques, working a lot on relaxation, doing meditation. Obviously would have had a good baseline fitness. And then when it comes to trying, you know, one of the days when you go, feck it, look, I'll go for a static. And you get set up and you get your coach. The best way to approach it is without expectation.
Is there a difference on the body and a static dive and a static breath hold and a deep dive? Like, obviously there's an extra oxygen element, but is the water putting an extra pressure on you as you go deeper as well?
Hugely. You know, depth diving or any sort of depth training takes a massive toll on the body as well as mentally. Because you're dealing with whatever, how many atmospheres of pressure. And then you have a whole other element of being able to equalize your ears. To me, it's a far more compound discipline, depth. There's a lot more to deal with. And static is, you know, it's really, really, really challenging. But depth, there's a far bigger toll on the body, I think, doing depth diving.
When you're doing, let's focus on the depth, because I feel like the depth diving for me is just so exciting. Like that when I watched the David Blaine static one, I'm like, you know, it could be a kid in the bathtub putting his head underwater. There's just nothing that exciting about it. I know there's elements of blacking out and stuff, but it's like the idea that you can dive 60 meters, like, you know, anyone that's run a 100 meter race, like 60 meters is a long, long way down. And Is there a reference point? I'm trying to think around Ireland.
So Liberty Hall in Dublin.
That's 60 meters.
So I think from the top, I think I looked it up or someone looked it up for me, is I think around 59.4 meters. So I think from the top of Liberty Hall down to the ground and back up again on one breath.
And for any non-Irish viewers, that's our tallest building in Dublin. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that gives some perspective to it. So as you're going on this 60 meter dive, is there a mental process you're going through? Do you have a mental sequence that you bring yourself through? And is it the same every time?
Usually, no, it's never the same. And actually today I did a PB, I did a personal best, and knowing that we'd be chatting this evening, I was thinking about it for my dive. So I've switched disciplines at the moment. So that 59 meters is called free immersion. And that involves you pulling down on a rope.
Okay.
So you're propelling yourself down on a rope. It's terrific. It's quite serene. And then the discipline I've been working on is called bifin. So it's kicking down with, actually prepared them here, my long set of fins.
Amazing.
So there's two of them, obviously. So bifins. It's a little bit more effort. And I did a personal best in that today. But it was really funny because I suppose I was just aware of my mindset before it, and I really wasn't feeling it whatsoever. I never want to cancel a dive session because I don't want to do that to my buddy. I wouldn't have gone this morning. So when I got into the water, I heard myself already making the excuses for not making the dive. I heard myself say, nah, I'm just not feeling it. I didn't sleep great last night and I'm getting a cold. And I just heard this big, long list. So, you know, I'm breathing up, I'm doing my preparation. I have my face in the water, my snorkel in my mouth. And I just had to have a little bit of a word with myself. There's absolutely no point going into the dive with that mindset.
And what was the chat you had with yourself?
So I just said, Claire, look where you are. So open my eyes. And below me, like the blue hole is absolutely incredible. But the light was catching bits of the coral, you know, all the different color blues below me. You know, it's expanding 93 meters underneath me. That in itself makes you gasp. So first was just kind of going, here, check in with yourself, girl. You know, look where you are and look how lucky you are to be there. So that was a kind of a nice grounding in a way.
It's the thing with an athlete as well. And I think the people that aren't athletes, they assume it's this amazing, glamorous life. And you always are in the perfect mindset to do the thing you love doing all the time. But when you step out of it, and it's actually a brilliant interview I have from one of the guys on the summit. His name's Jerry Redmond and his brand is Prison to Pro. And briefly, he was a professional soccer player and then his father went to jail. And he ended up getting embroiled in gangland, rose quite high up gangland. And before going to jail, checked himself and said, look, your father's been in jail. Your grandfather's been in jail. You've just had a child. You need to change your life. And he changed his life around. He became a professional triathlete.
But
he was talking about the similarities between athletics and where everyone wants to be a pro athlete until they figure out what's involved in being a pro athlete. And he had like my favorite line from the entire summit so far. He said, everyone wants to be a gangster until it's time to be a gangster. I was like, that feels like exactly like what you were going through today.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh gosh, I really actually have to go and do it. But I've worked in a puppeteer in another part of my life. So I would have been a big Jim Henson fan. And I read his biography a couple of years ago, actually on a diving trip. And he came up with a phrase that I try and bring into my training, whether I'm peaking or whether it's just creating base training. But he used a phrase called playful curiosity.
I love that.
On today's dive, I said, okay, so you might not make the target, but you also might. So with this kind of slippery mindset, you're not fully in the zone. Let's see, with playful curiosity, how far you can go.
I love that.
Yeah. So, and as a result, it was absolutely gorgeous dive. I really enjoyed it. And I did 3 meters shallower yesterday and that was shite. That was just like, come on, get going. You know, kind of that gritting teeth, just head down. It was such an unpleasant dive in comparison. So
I know if I'm warming up for I do some indoor track events and it's a 4 kilometer pursuit and it's basically 4 kilometers as hard as you can go. So for anyone that hasn't done that type of event, I'd compare it to almost someone holding your head underwater and you're just struggling for that breath. You just can't get the breath and your body is just building toxins to the point where it just wants to completely crunch to a halt. And you're in a indoor, crowds are there, you know, there's a big build up to this event, but you're trying to stay so calm and just like pistons, complete efficiency, no wasted energy. But for that event, I go through the same mental process. Like I finish my warm up at the same time. I listen to the same songs. I have the same mantras I repeat to myself. Do you have like a process pre-dive?
That's a really good question and something I was chatting about over my celebration cake this afternoon. You know, I am a creature of habit and I would have a tendency to do the same. Like there's a certain set of songs that I always listen to and then it can get quite, maybe not superstitious, but you know, I put on my dive computer first, next is my weight belt, next is my neck weight, and it becoming quite methodical and ritualistic. But I'm trying to stay out of that because we dive in the ocean. And that is one thing that will never be the same from day to day. So you can't get too attached to routine. Obviously, you know, there are certain things that I will do that are within my control, but I'm trying to just be a little bit softer in terms of how I approach a dive. Having said that, I will always, you know, reach for the rope with my right hand, thumb down, you know, it's all very specific. But in terms of pre-dive things, yeah, I think, yeah, but like I try to let go of them a little bit, if that makes sense.
When I was thinking about the similarities between cycling and diving, in road races, a lot of time you're on somebody's wheel, someone else is pushing the pace, and you're at an unsustainable pace. You're like, I can't hold on. And different bike riders have different ways of coping with this because you don't know how long it's going to last. You're just trying to get more and more and more in the hope that it eventually slows down. And I know I had a teammate, and at the start of the race, I'd mentioned to him that I have this thing where I count to 10. And I count to 10, I go, okay, I'm going to quit in 10 seconds. Just hold on for 10. And I'll go, okay, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, down to 10. And then I'll get there and I'll go, stop being a pussy. Another 10 seconds, another 10 seconds. And I'll do this. But I told him this on day one of an 8-day race. And I chatted to him at the end. And I was like, well, you know, for your first 8-day race, how'd you get on? He's like, I spent 8 days counting backwards from 10. I was like, oh my God, that's horrific.
that resonates so much. In static breath hold, so that time discipline, it's exactly what I do. I think I can always do another 10 seconds. You know, so I just kill through. All right, come on, Claire. 10 more seconds, then you're going to have coffee with your pals. It's sunny. Right, you get to that one. Let's go for another 10. And that's how you kind of trick yourself into drawing out that time. And yeah, I guess it's the same in depth. A little bit. So you're on your way up and it might have felt like a long dive and your legs are burning from lactic acid, and then you see your safety diver, and your safety diver, well, today mine met me at 15 meters, and I go, ah, it's 15 meters, I can always do 15. So it is, you kind of like break it down into little chunks just to make it manageable, I guess.
Different athletes describe it as, you hear a lot of cyclists talking about flow, or I was just at one with the bike today. Is there an equivalent where you're just at peace with the breath, at peace with the water?
Yes. and that's what has, you know, I'm pretty much living in a community of free divers. I play backgammon with them in the afternoon. I'm going to dinner with them later on. I breakfast with them. You know, we love free diving. That's all we talk about. And the reason why so many people have left their normal inverted commas lives to come out here is because of that state. Chasing that state. So typically that would be found during free fall, and in free fall you're negatively buoyant, so you don't have to do anything to just fall. If the mind is working overtime, it tends to bring in tension. You're thinking, oh God, am I there yet? Is there another couple of meters or whatever? And it's not comfortable. So that would say yesterday's dive. Today, with my playful curiosity, I just thought to myself, okay, Claire, you want to have a nice dive, keep the belly soft, stay nice and relaxed. Ooh, this is lovely. Ooh, the water feels cold. You know, it just feels incredible. And it's almost like that state. You know, do you ever fall asleep on public transport and you kind of nod off and then your head jerks awake? Yeah. It's kind of that state. It's not fully asleep, but not fully awake either. And then suddenly you're at the bottom. Like, that is the most magical feeling ever. I think I've used this phrase before, but it's the closest thing I think I'll ever experience to flying.
Because I think I've spoken across the summit and across the podcast to different sort of, it's difficult to put them all into even one basket with a label, but mental skills experts, you know, I'm using that broadly to mean anything from sports psychology to yoga or anything around mindfulness. And so many people chase this state of mindfulness, of zen, of quieting the mind. And it seems to me like this is the ultimate way to quieten the mind, because it's so like Darwinian. It's connecting you back to almost the transient nature of life. You get this wrong, it's you know, there's not many second chances down there.
Well, that's exactly it. You know, I think I've tried meditation, mindfulness, yoga, without freediving, and it just never really pulls me in. The only time I really engage with those practices is when I use it for freediving. So freediving is always my dangling carrot. The big thing about freediving is thoughts use oxygen, which I have learned the hard way. So whilst my body might be nice and relaxed and I might not have much tension, if your brain is racing through thoughts or what ifs or, okay, what am I going to do on the surface and all this kind of thing, you're consuming oxygen. And that can be the difference between staying conscious and not.
So cycling is a sport that it's had a checkered history with doping, and a lot of the doping has centered around oxygen transportation. And it's something that I think when you look at how we gain a performance edge in cycling or diving, we're both after that same thing, efficiency of oxygen, improving oxygen transportation. What sort of training and skills have you used to be able to improve your ability to utilize oxygen and improve those efficiencies?
For me, a lot of it, it's still mental. Obviously I work on, so I mentioned earlier on, hypoxic threshold. So being able to hold your breath for longer, dealing with CO2 is a big thing as well. And obviously when we're doing a more strenuous discipline like bifins, you know, the body, the muscles can't fuel themselves with oxygen. So the lactic acid buildup can be quite big. So there's, you know, a huge element of training around that. But for me, it is that thing we've just spoken about, being efficient with your thoughts. And, you know, I don't know about you, but if someone says, just let your mind go blank, nature abhors a vacuum. Sure enough, there'll be like a million and one thoughts in my head. So it's trying to find that sweet spot between not having an empty mind, which, you know, might let bad thoughts in, and just keeping something low for your brain, just as a bit of an anchor. And I suppose that's, you know, in meditation, they do that using mantras and things like that. For me, I count, or I sing songs in my head, just something just to keep the brain a little bit occupied.
I think there's probably a lot of people listening to this and saying, like, Anthony, you're really riffing on one here with the freediving and indulging, you know, something that you're into. But there's so many takeaways we can take as cyclists, or else even people that are just watching this as a that have a general interest in health and fitness, because I've seen a great quote from you. I'm not sure where I read it, but it said, you said, it helps me live better on the land. And I think we're just starting to get an awareness of how important breathing is to our overall health, wellness, and happiness.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Like I said, like everyone else, I'm not super doing things that are good for me, unless freediving is the dang, you know, there's something to go for, which is always freediving. But I think freediving has helped me be a little bit more accountable. If I'm diving, freediving will get me into bed properly at the, you know, at the right time, or will lower my caffeine intake, will help me watch what I eat, will make me really conscious of the energy I spend and how I spend it before a session. So starting to transfer those skills into day-to-day life has a huge benefit. And I know for me in lockdown, it kind of all went out the window. And again, you find yourself I found myself in a state where I was, you know, really stressed. Kind of had that humming level of anxiety around all the restrictions and not seeing family and friends, etc. And I had to fully kind of just sit down and go, okay, this is far from ideal. You are not sleeping, your diet's gone, you're not exercising. You know, let's go back to basics. And for me, the basics will always be, let's check in with the breathing and go from there. And sure enough, then once that's in order a little bit more, sleep, you know, sleep improves and diet improves. So freediving has taught me so much about, I think, being accountable and being honest with yourself.
I had a Julie B. Yoga on the summit, and she was talking about breath work. And one of the really cool things she said is, as a baby, we actually know how to breathe from the stomach all the way up. And as we journey through life, we actually regress and we unlearn this habit. And you see somebody, you know, if you even picture somebody that's sick or unhealthy and you wanted to dig really deep into the characteristics of that person, it's normally slouched with a very shallow breath. And it really shows us the importance of breath for healthy living.
Yeah, and I talk about this in my courses, and that's exactly the example I use. You know, the great thing is we all know how to do it. We started off life that way, breathing deeply into our belly, and like that, as the muscles develop, as we build tension in our chest, we shift to a shorter, shallower breath, which just, you know, creates such a feedback loop with our nervous system, keeps us in that, you know, heightened state of anxiety, or, you know, builds that level of stress. But actually, you know, breaking that pattern and switching from, you know, fight or flight into rest and digest, that slower mode, the parasympathetic nervous system, that's about long exhales, that's about belly breathing, that's about expanding. And exactly as you said, if I were to imagine right now an idea of someone that's stressed or angry, it would be a short, shallow breath, shoulders rising up to their ears.
And isn't it an amazing tool when you start to think about its application? Because in the abstract, people are like, okay, Anthony and Claire, this is great for free diving or maybe cycling in a velodrome, but I'm working 9 to 5 and I'm coming home to a family, a stressed household, and I'm trying to cram my session in that evening. But with tools like this, you actually have the ability, when you drive in and you're stressed after your long day of work and been stuck in traffic, you want to be the best version of you showing up back at your house. You're about to meet your kids, you're about to meet your life partner. But with breath work, you have that ability to, boom, change your state, and you come in the door a different person than the guy who arrives stressed.
Absolutely. I think there's a meditation I do, and I'm going to paraphrase it horribly, I'm afraid, but something like, enjoy the simple luxury of breathing. And it always sticks with me, because obviously we're breathing all day, every day. But to actually take time to do it consciously, it's such a luxury, and it makes such a difference. And like that, good mood, bad mood, and changing from one to the other can all be done with breath. It's a tool most of us, thankfully, have with us all the time. It's so underutilized, but I think there is a shift in the awareness at the moment, and like terrific practitioners. I think you're chatting to a few of them. Neil Verco is doing great work, and see James Nestor's book came out. So
that's really kind of popularized breath work. Yeah. And I know I've kind of pieces of masking tape all over my bedside locker from tape I'm out at night. Have you done the same?
Well, my dirty secret is I'm a mouth breather because of freediving. So we all breathe through our mouths because we wear nose clips. And for singing as well, you breathe predominantly through your mouth. So I kind of have to keep that at the quiet.
Claire, if someone else wants to come along and they want to learn from, you know, the incredible journey you're on, they want to dip their toe into this world, do you have courses or information resources you can point to?
Yeah, so kind of you can find me on Instagram, so at Claire Walsh Life.
And your Instagram is brilliant.
Oh, thank you. I've had a few messages saying, I'm going to unfollow you until you get back to the cold. sunny pictures at the moment. So at Claire Walsh Life, and I do have a website. It's under construction a little bit at the moment, but it's clairewalshlife.com. And all my email addresses and things are on both of those.
Claire, that's brilliant. I can't wait till you start doing physical in-person courses after COVID, because I'll be the first name on the list.
Terrific. Thanks so much.
Thanks for chatting, Claire.
Cheers.
Hey, everybody. It's Anthony again. Really quick, I want to invite you to join arguably the best thing I've ever put out inside the Roadman community. It's a challenge. It's a challenge called the 14-Day Kickstart Challenge. So regardless of where your fitness is at right now, this is going to be the catalyst for making you faster and making you leaner. I've created this challenge to take the guesswork out of everything. It's 14 days of training plans, regardless of what your level is. There's masters, beginner, advanced. There's meal plans, shopping list, and even a video course holding your hand and talking you through it all. So what I recommend you do right now is just stop everything, press pause on this audio, and go to roadmancycling.com/14-day, or check out the link in the bio. That's roadmancycling.com/14-day.